hour number five of this marathon, Joe Beamer with you on what is now the Joe Beamer Show. The first 4 hours filling in for Bella Villa. Now I'm filling in for myself. Next hour, Chris Kroc will take over the last hour of my show and all of Bowerly's show. So we've got you covered here on News Radio 930 WBEN. And we are happy to be joined this segment by Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. Congresswoman, welcome back to the show.
Well, great to be on. Thank you for having me.
I want to start with what we saw this morning with the Senate committee holding Fauci in contempt. What do you think of this whole series that's been going on? And do you think we'll ever get the true answers that we deserve about what happened 6 years ago?
Well, look, it's not going to happen in a blue state like New York, where we have an attorney general who's all about prosecuting anyone that's affiliated with Trump or Republicans. It's going to end up being, you know, one of the other states where attorneys general will stand up and actually go on the state side. Because remember, he had a full pardon issued by Joe Biden going all the way back to 2014. So the only hope we have is to get some evidence out that can be used ultimately in a court of law in state court, because we are not going to be able to do a federal court proceeding against Anthony Fauci unless we can find something on him from before 2014. But as you know, the statute of limitation is probably run on most of that.
You know, I brought it up in the first segment, thinking it would be, you know, a one segment thing. And we had 2 hours of calls of people like, you know, again, do I think the man should be prosecuted for what he did? I mean, that's for maybe a court to decide. But
I lost you for a second.
I do think that we deserve answers from Fauci, and the fact that he's got the pardon, it's just really disappointing to me, because I think all he has done is make people lose trust in the government that can only cause more chaos down the road.
I agree. Whether you agree that he should be prosecuted or not, he was pled the Fifth Amendment, which means he did not want to say anything that would incriminate him in a court of law, meaning a state court, since he had the federal court pardon. But, you know, 111 times, you can't tell us the truth about what you were thinking. And also, you know, he also profited off of being in that position for so many years and made money at it, which is, you know, even, you know, just want to bill on it, you know, people that serve in these places, the public, and way all too well in New York State how terrible the situation is under COVID. It's a nightmare that many of us would hopefully forget. But think about all those people when Governor Cuomo made that nursing home order to take COVID positive patients and take them out of, you know, the settings in a hospital where they have the facilities and the resources to take care of and isolate patients like that, and throw them into a nursing home setting where they don't have the resources to protect the residents, and how the ambulances were driving in and the hearses were driving out, and all these people died because of that deadly nursing home order, and we're still trying to hold Andrew Cuomo accountable. So Anthony Fauci has to be held accountable, whether it's prosecution or fines in a state court or something, so we can never let this happen again. I mean, I just think about the nightmare of COVID. I was touring some facilities out in Western New York yesterday, and they were just describing, you know, just the ridiculousness of how scary it was under Cuomo. And people were actually given incentives by Cuomo and others to arrest other people or to turn them in and say, these people or this business are violating the COVID protocols, so we're going to arrest them in the right place in their business, you know, all of which turned out to be non-science. And I think that's the thing that really gets everybody. Remember how this all started. It's just going to take 2 weeks to stop the spread, which turned into years-long nightmare for so many. Businesses lost out. Students weren't allowed to go back to school. We've gotten way behind in New York State. I mean, the whole thing was a nightmare. I think Fauci, he should be talking about putting forth his rules, which, by the way, he even said that the 3-foot rule and the 6-foot rule, none of these things were actually valid. But yet you look at people standing, you know, 6 feet apart from each other in grocery stores and, you know, official events with the Biden administration. You know, you remember they had all their circles drawn where people mask down and sit down, you know, just a couple of feet in the next level under and take your mask off. Like, that's science. I mean, this is the absurdity of the whole thing.
It was absurd. And you just can't believe. And, you know, you talk about how long it went on. I mean, gosh, polling cars had executive emergency powers until 2022. I mean, just a complete power grab by some.
Absolutely. You had to bring up yours and the politician.
Yeah. Well, his name was going to come up eventually. After the primaries on Tuesday, we are now seeing this socialist movement in the Democratic Party move outside of downstate New York. I mean, to me, this just seems pretty dangerous. Some of the things that Democratic socialists stand for now taking over the mainstream of the party.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's not just a socialist movement. I think it's a Marxist movement. When I served in the state legislature, I left in 2016. There were new members coming in talking about and celebrating Karl Marx on the floor of the state assembly. And they've gotten steam. And now the Democrat Socialist America, which is the nice way of putting Marxism, government control of everything, taking your personal property away, paying taxes to such a level that, you know, it's really the politics of envy. And I think what Mondami has done is created, he's not governing New York. What he's doing in New York is beginning this socialist movement and building on it and fundraising off it. And it's gaining steam in places like you saw Michigan and some other areas where, you know, where these people are really catching hold. And you notice the people that are really going into this, I just say it's interesting, the demographics, the people buying this tend to be young, white, rich college students. Those are the people buying this socialism movement, not the working class. The people are out there working for a living who understand and appreciate, you know, what our country is about, which is this communist socialist movement. How any of these people advance these principles, including Bernie Sanders, and can actually take an oath of office to our Constitution, because it is the opposite of what we stand for. We are about private property, free enterprise, human rights, the dignity individual, not about this collective. And that's where I find this is going to be a really interesting year, how much this drags the Democrats into this corner with these people who are running for office. It's very dangerous to me, and I agree with you.
You have a guy who associates with another person who said America deserved 9/11. I mean, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of 9/11, and a major candidate for Senate says the guy who said America deserved 9/11 should be in his administration. I didn't think we'd see that day, and now he's being embraced by mainstream Democrats.
Look, this isn't an uncommon occurrence. The extreme Islamists, like you would see in Iran, you know, teamed up with communists back during the Iranian Revolution that took out the Shah of Iran back in 1979 and installed the Ayatollah. But guess what happened to those communists that got behind the Ayatollah thinking they could merge together? The Islamists took over and said, we don't care what you stand for. We're an authoritarian tyrant regime. And that's what they are. And they kill their own people who stand up to them or try to protest or want anything. And I think it's kind of an interesting how history repeats itself. And I think we could learn a lot from really what's going on with Iran and looking at our history there. I know people don't want to like talk about it, but it is a really important thing that's happening in the world. Where are we going where we have freedom of religion, but we also have an extreme form of a religion that does not comport with our constitutional principles, particularly Sharia law?
You know, and democratic socialism, it's been on the ballot here in Erie County. There were a few candidates that won their primary. You know, Congresswoman, you say it's going to be a big year. Obviously, midterms, Democrats are supposed to have the advantage going in. Do you see mainstream Democrats? I mean, even not the people in the party, but voters. I just can't see them going for some of these things. I mean, abolishing prisons, abolishing police, abolishing Senate. I mean, they really just want a completely different way of life than we're used to.
Again, how can they take an oath of office to the U.S. Constitution when they're looking to destroy it and everything they stand for is an anathema to what we are? I think it's looking better than people think for the midterms. I mean, certainly there's a lot of things that could happen between now and then. Depends on the quality of the candidates going in. But I think, you know, right now the Republicans have a slight edge in the House just because some of the redistricting that has happened has given us a little bit of an edge. But the Democrats are going to have to battle these far left socialists in areas where there might be more of a purple district. Now, New York City, that's different. These people are going to Congress because New York is a deep blue area, as are certain parts of some of these blue states, California. We're talking about some parts of Michigan. I still think Michigan is likely to go red. I think that Mike Rogers has a really good shot of winning this. I just think the Senate actually, with this happening, with this El Sayed winning in Michigan, I think Rogers has a bit of an advantage here. And I also think, though, then again, some of the issues we're going to be having in these you know, swing states like Alaska, where they have ranked choice voting, which I think is cheating. I think it's unconstitutional. It needs to be challenged. I don't understand why, if you win all the first place votes but not all the second place votes, you come in second in an election. That stands against our one rule, one man, one vote, you know, in our country. And this ranked choice voting is bad. So Alaska could be up for grabs with Dan Murphy as this current senator. I think we're behind in North Carolina, which is now held by a Republican. And they're saying Ohio could be in play when it comes to the Senate. But I feel like with this Democrat socialist movement that is really a Marxist movement and really about anti-police and really anarchy and about envy and about really just a subversive movement. It's not about reforming or a positive thing. It's about subversion and it's about control and power and envy. And I don't think those things appeal to most Americans, very far left brand and these very highly charged people who, when you boil it all down, most of the time, it's Trump derangement syndrome. They just don't like Trump, and they'll vote for anybody but Trump or a Trump-supported candidate. So I think, unfortunately, that's really what it's all about.
To that point, it's something I've been talking a lot about, the TDS, and you have, you know, local candidates. Jeremy Zellner, the chair of the Erie County Democrats, he's like in every local election, he's saying, send a message to Donald Trump. I don't know how the West Seneca Council sends a message to Donald Trump, but I also don't understand a voter who would say, I'm fine with an increase in crime. I'm fine with cashless bail. I'm fine with raise the age that's leading to car thefts and all this crime in New York State. But because of Trump, I'll continue voting for Kathy Hochul. Like, I don't understand that mindset.
We vote and just make decisions based on not what somebody actually does, but on their personality. And if you look at the accomplishments of the Republican House and under President Trump as well in the Senate over this last year or so, so many good things have happened. I mean, look at the economy. As much as everybody's screaming about affordability, it is the policies of the Democrats, particularly under Biden and especially under New York state law, that have created this unaffordability. Give it to the Democrats for taking unbridled, uncontrollable inflation and turn it into affordability, something they created, the arsonist that lit the fire and is now, you know, blaming us for it. We actually renewed the tax cuts. We renewed these benefits to people that are in the middle class. I've heard from my accountant and others, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. So I can't tell you, dozens of seniors who I've met in person all across upstate New York who have said they've gotten money back because of the benefits to senior citizens on Social Security. All these things have been very helpful. And also the price of goods are down other than in energy. But again, look at the energy prices. The energy prices are actually no higher and actually in many cases lower than they were under Joe Biden. The reason they went down under Biden is he unleashed and just emptied out our strategic petroleum reserve we have for an emergency, not when you're trying to lower prices for political reasons. You know, we have a war that we have going on in the Middle East. I mean, that is a legitimate reason that we've had some issues with oil. But even in spite of that, the U.S. is now an energy exporter. We are the number one producer in the world of natural gas and oil. So this is a good thing for us. And what are we doing in New York State? The absolute worst energy policy in the country, except for California. We have a dangerously unstable grid. We have a war on fossil fuels, which have brought us, especially natural gas, which has brought our emissions down. We have a state that is forcing delivery fees onto your energy bills and disguising it as if the energy company is doing that, but that money goes directly into your state coffers. So take a look at your energy bills. All this being driven by the Democrats' policies and the Democrats' taxes on fuel. High taxes when it comes to the gas tax, including an additional sales tax for each county that is not happening in every other state. And that's why we feel the pinch even more because of the bad policies in New York State.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, talking about extreme Islam and Shia law. In February, the mayor of New York, Zohra Mamdani, was at a service. He spoke at a service where then one of the prayers recited translates to the relief for the believers in the killing of the infidels by your sword. That's the mayor of New York was at that service, spoke at that service where that prayer was said. I mean, to me, that kind of stuff is scary, especially right in New York City.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he is not shy about it, nor is his wife, about their extreme anti-Semitism and really blaming everything on Jewish people and on the state of Israel. I mean, this is absurd. That is not the reason for our problems in the world. You know, the Jewish people represent about 16 million people in the entire world. I think out of what, there's eight to, I think, I'm not sure what the number is. We're growing in some parts of the world very quickly. You know, 8 billion people in the world. I think, you know, you're talking about 16 million people. That's one of the, it's actually the smallest Abrahamic religious population when you look at, you know, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. So it's insane. But this is what the anti-Semitism that they've been able to stoke around New York City. The mayor's wife makes all kinds of anti-Semitic remarks, and it's become mainstream. And the Democrats have become the party of anti-Semitism. Once again, you know, they were the party of the Confederacy. They were the party of slavery. You know, the North, they controlled the South. We controlled the North. We have historic sites all over upstate New York. The Abolitionist Hall of Fame is in upstate New York. All Republicans, you know, we have the airport in Rochester named after Frederick Douglass, a Republican who fought for the abolitionist movement. We have, you know, Susan B. Anthony, who fought for women's rights, a Republican who is in upstate New York working in all this same era. You know, the Democrats are back to their old ways of the old Dixiecrats and the, you know, they're really, you know, the bigotry and chauvinistic aspect of the Democrats is coming out again, unfortunately, in the way that they've decided to use class envy and race and gender as part of their you know, their platform, as opposed to uniting us, you know, and emphasizing what's great about being individuals.
Before we let you go, I got to ask you about the conflict in Iran, your thoughts on what's going on there and how you'd like to see this end.
Yeah, it's obviously there's a little uncertainty here. I know I'm not at the negotiating table. I do think that, you know, President Trump wants to resolve this, and he doesn't want to, you know, he said today he doesn't want to go out and bomb more sites and kill more people. He'd like it to resolve it. But, you know, the skepticism I have is you cannot make a deal with these people. They can sign something on paper. They're not going to live up to it. These people have been terrorizing and killing Americans and our allies and people all over the Middle East, you know, for 47 years. It's time that we gave the people of Iran and the diaspora and everyone who has been denied any kind of human rights the chance to have a democratic government. And I think, you know, this is a great country with a great history that has been just plagued by this regime for 47 years. You know, I can't supplant my opinion for the president, but I do think that we need to take these people seriously, and we need to project force and strength, and that's the only way they're going to come to the table and stop killing their own people and using the money they get from oil for their proxies to kill people around the Middle East.
Absolutely. Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, always great talking with you. As you know, open invitation any of the 6 days of the week I'm on the air.
Great. Thanks. Good talking to you as well.
That is Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. When we come back, we'll wrap up the 5 hours. 5 hours. Anything I talked about, maybe you heard with the Congresswoman, maybe you heard with Bruce Blakeman, anything we have talked about in the first 4.5 hours of this program is open to you, or something that you're disappointed you didn't hear. Maybe you're yelling at your radio, Joe, you were on the air for 5 freaking hours and didn't mention blank. Well, this is your chance to make sure blank gets mentioned on the air. 803-0930, *930. We'll wrap it up. It's Joe Beamer, and for the hour, actually in for myself. It's kind of nice. Here on News Radio 930 WBEN.